Welcome into the newest edition of the Just in Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And in this week's episode, we'll be talking about the NFL, weeks two and week three. We will have further insight on week three. We will have our very successful NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. We will discuss the WNBA as they barrel into their playoffs. And lastly, we will have Jack's hot take. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just in Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow and turn on the post notifications on all Just in Time Sports social media with the social media handle at JTime Sports. Now, as always, sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just in Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just in Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform. We growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts. We create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from. I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statement. This is Just in Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just in Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it,
he gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. One of my favorite style shows. We've been getting a lot of these lately. The Insta release shows. I definitely enjoy them because, again, it gives you guys an opportunity to hear fairly up to the minute or up to the hour, nonetheless, information, my reaction to it. Stuff is breaking literally right before we started the show. Justin Herbert has been diagnosed with a high ankle sprain. And so I guess we're going to start with the Chargers. Welcome into the show. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your podcast. Don't forget to check out the YouTube show, the Just in Time Sports YouTube show, JTS After Dark, which that new episode came out yesterday, featuring Jai from Hey Jai, produced by IMS Media. And as always, don't forget to follow and turn on your post notifications for Just in Time Sports social media at JTime Sports. But now that we got all the business out of the way, I guess we're going to start with the Chargers. They were supposed to be my second team. New Orleans is supposed to be my first team. But there's breaking news fresh into the show about the Los Angeles Chargers. So I guess in this case, two becomes one, one becomes two. Again, Jim Harbaugh has told reporters that Justin Herbert has suffered a high ankle sprain. He suffered it Sunday, and that he described the pain as not great. Now, Herbert has not been ruled out. He's actually been officially deemed as questionable. Harbaugh's Chargers are 2-0. Excuse me. Sorry. Been dealing with a sickness, guys. My apologies. So my voice sounds a little weird from what you're used to hearing. That's why. But this Chargers team looks like a Harbaugh team. I just sound like Doc Rivers there for a second. But this Chargers team looks and feels like a Jim Harbaugh team. They run the ball. Or a Harbaugh team in general. They run the ball. They're physical on defense. They protect their quarterback. And even though Jim Harbaugh has a superstar-level quarterback in Justin Herbert, he's not asking him to throw the ball 35 times. He's not asking him to make 12-yard throws, 15-yard throws on repeat. He's asking him to run the offense. He's asking him to make smart throws at the right time, at the right moments. That's what he's asking him to do. And so, absolutely, looks a lot different than last year's team under Brandon Staley, which is always something that I always thought was confusing to me whenever we looked into the Chargers last season. And it's like, the talent's there. Like, I won't sit here and be like, oh, they're not talented. They're there. Brandon Staley was so bad, he had people people around like that liked the sport wondering, did the Chargers players like all of a sudden hit a wall? That's how bad Brandon Staley. People questioned Khalil Mack, if he still had it, Bosa. They're like, man, this Chargers team maybe not that good. No, Brandon Staley was that bad. Like, he's awful. And so I am glad he's no longer coaching this team, because now we get to see them flourish. Now, is this the kind of system I think they're going to win a Super Bowl with ultimately? I don't think so. I don't think Jim Harbaugh wins a Super Bowl with the Chargers. Do I think that people are a lot more scared of the Chargers now with Jim Harbaugh? Absolutely. You're going to be prepared. You're going to be ready to go. And you're going to be amped up to go. Now, what happens after that? I don't know. But I can assure you that you're going to be ready to go when you get to the field. And he's put his imprint on those two games. Those games look the same. 22 to 27 points. You know, the other team scores between 9 and 14. And then they wear you down, wear you down, wear you down. And right about 3 minutes left, they hit you for the game, for the nail in the coffin touchdown, usually on the ground. And it's just, and those two games look the same. And all you do is swap the jerseys out. And it's just like, that's what a Jim Harbaugh team is going to look like. But with this injury news, Justin Herbert, I wonder how much of that comes into play. Because if Herbert plays with a high ankle sprain, he's not nearly as mobile and not a threat as much from the mobility standpoint. So if he's going to be out there with a high ankle sprain, he's not nearly the threat mobily as he would be normally. If it's a Chargers backup, then that could be a different story entirely, because now you're thinking less, okay, he can't kill us through the air as well. We can come further down and try to fill up this run lanes, which I think people are going to do anyway, because a high ankle sprain on a quarterback, especially if it's his plant foot, he may not have the driving power that he would normally. But that is something definitely to keep our eye on in Los Angeles. But again, this team looks like a Jim Harbaugh team. They're physical. They're dominant. Like I said, physically. There's a physicality about the Chargers that was not there the past few years. But to the team I planned on leading the show with, the New Orleans Saints, the home state Saints. They look like world beaters. It's funny, but it's not funny. So a stat came out today from WDSU in New Orleans that said there hasn't been a murder in New Orleans in 18 days. And it's actually a record. It's a streak it hasn't happened in like quite a long time. 18 straight days without a murder. And somebody was like, Clint Kubiak is single-handedly saving the city of New Orleans. And that was a joke, but then like credible reporters were like, no, like we can't prove it, but this is probably directly tied to the Saints. Like, the whole city is up. The whole city is vibrant because the Saints look like championship level people. We've known for years, Dennis Allen's on that staff, head coach of DC, they're going to have a good defense. The problem was they had no offense. Pete Carmichael just wasn't doing it offensively, and we see him not doing it in Denver. But we'll get to what's going on in Denver a little later. But we see him not doing it in Denver. But Clint Kubiak, who served under the Shanahans in San Francisco for a while, brought that system into New Orleans, and they're averaging 44.5 or 45.5 points a game right now. They just curb stomped the Dallas Cowboys 44-19 in Dallas after they gave 47 to Carolina. So when they put 47 on Carolina, oh, it's 45.5. Yeah, and they put 47 on Carolina. Everybody went, it's Carolina. 47-10 is impressive. But it's Carolina. You know, like, how impressive is that? Like, it's Carolina. They did it to Dallas. Now, Dallas, you know, the Dallas of the 1990s? No. But is Dallas still a very credible, very real franchise? Absolutely. And they put 44 points on Dallas. Kind of easy. The Saints scored in their first, I think, 13 or 15 possessions of the season. I mean, absolutely destruction. Alvin Kamara had 4 touchdowns against Dallas. Which, again, this system is set up to emphasize a really, really good running back. See Christian McCaffrey and San Fran. See Raheem Mostert, David Achane. They're not on that level, but in Miami. See Alvin Kamara now in New Orleans. You know, that team is real. And so that defense now, instead of playing on shorter fields or playing with from behind or playing with some leads, now they're getting big leads. So now a defense that was already really good at getting turnovers, really good at defending the pass and stuff like that, now they're getting basically, I know you got to pass it because you're down, you know, 28-10. You know, my offense scoring, you got to score back. You're going to make mistakes in the passing game. So now a really good defense now has the energy from the offense to keep them going and to keep them rolling. They say, hey, let's give you the ball back. Let's give you the ball back to try and win that game. So, you know, kudos to New Orleans for figuring this thing out, for getting a grip on what's going on. And smart by Dennis Allen, man, hiring Clint Kubiak. Now, I don't think he'll have Clint Kubiak for long. I think he could be a dark horse candidate for the Cincinnati job, which would do wonders for Joe Burrow. But because see what he's doing with Derek Carr, but he would do wonders for Joe Burrow. And I think that if Zach Taylor ultimately is let go in Cincinnati, that Clay Kubiak has to be the primary target to take over for Zach Taylor in order to continue to emphasize the development of Joe Burrow. All right, we've talked about the good. We talked about the great. Let's talk about the ugly, at least for now. Actually, no, I'm going to keep going with the good. I'm going to keep going with the good. I'll get to the ugly at the end. Arizona is real. I want everybody to know Arizona is legit. They went at Buffalo and had a 2-touchdown lead on the Bills before Josh Allen goes Superman. Or they probably beat the Bills. And to be honest, they kind of had the Bills dead to right. And then just Arizona'd it up. You know, one of those, if this game, they had that same lead in week 5, they win. You know, but just being in week 1, Josh Allen came running through. And they kind of, when the momentum broke, they broke kind of thing. Week 2, they get the Rams at home. They put 28 on the Bills. Week 2, they get the Rams at home. 41-10 later, they beat the Rams. And their schedule actually set up fairly decently. They have home Lions. That's going to be a tough one. Home Commanders, they should win. At Niners is going to be tough. At Packers is going to be tough. Home Chargers, that's a home game. I'll give it to them. At Dolphins, who knows if Tua back. Home Bears, they should get that one. Home Jets, they should get that one. At Seahawks, division game. Vikings, they can outscore them. Home Seahawks, they'll get it. Home Patriots, looks like they'll get it. At Panthers, they're going to win that one. At the Rams, division game. Niners are division game. So they're looking right now at about 9-10 wins. With 9-10 wins, they will get in the playoffs, I guarantee it. And so that is a big jump from what the expectations were in Arizona for this season. Because a lot of people did not anticipate Arizona being this good. I believe when I looked at their schedule originally, I had them, right around 8 wins. So to say they can legitimately get 9 or 10 wins just from looking at how they're playing, it would not shock me if Arizona got 11 and went 11-6 and, you know, hosted the first round playoff game, but because the Niners are in their division, but, you know, 5 seed going to a bad 4 seed, going to whoever wins the NFC South. Okay, New Orleans looks pretty real. Who wins the NFC East? And beats them. You know, like, Arizona is real. That's a real team. Kyler Murray looks like the quarterback I always believed he could be. If you guys remember a couple years ago, I did the QB Elite thing where I was like, there's only 6 quarterbacks. How I would define an elite quarterback is if I would only ever trade that person straight up for one of the other 6. And this is before Stroud came in the league, but it was like Lamar, Aaron Rodgers, Kyler, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and I think I had Hurts in at the time. That list is still holding fairly secure. I would just take Hurts out and put CJ Stroud. And I would take Rodgers out at this point as well. But Allen, Lamar, Kyler, Burrow, Stroud, Herbert is to me the elite six. And if I'm missing somebody, I apologize. If I'm missing somebody, obvious. Oh, Mahomes. Yeah, those are the seven. Those are the elite seven. I wouldn't trade anybody. I wouldn't trade them one for one for anybody outside of that group. If money didn't matter, salaries didn't matter, whatever. Just straight up, would you rather game? Nobody outside of that seven is being traded for anybody in that seven rationally. I said it with Kyler Murray. People pushed back on Kyler Murray immediately. And I was like, you got to understand. He was the greatest high school quarterback ever. Period. He was 43-0 as a starter in Texas 6A football with three straight titles. Three straight Mr. Footballs. He goes to college. He wins the Heisman. The only reason why he never wins the national championship because his team was so overmatched by those prime Bama teams. It is what it is, right? Then he goes to the NFL, and he's playing a style of football that no one else is playing. He's playing the air raid. It was a mess. He had Cliff Kingsbury. But when it worked, you saw, my guy, he's amazing. Get him some time, get him some weapons, and watch what he does. And he ripped the Rams to shreds with Marvin Harrison Jr. My goodness. He was tearing the Bills up. Marvin Harrison Jr. had like one catch and could have had the game win if Kyler had like another second of time. He hits Marvin Harrison over the middle for the game winner anyway. Like, Arizona is a real football team, and I'm excited for the state of Arizona. I'm not a huge fan of that stadium because the Patriots could lose in Super Bowls in there, but I'm excited for the state of Arizona. I'm excited for the state. I'm excited for Kyler Murray and that crew. I said, backing up my Kyler Murray stuff. And then the last of the positivity, Kirk Cousins, man, pulled off a magic drive. He gets his first game winning drive as the quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons. Kudos to Captain Kirk. He did great there. I mean, minute 46. It was textbook. Minute 46, no timeouts. We need a touchdown. Boom, 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 touchdown. And it was just like, that's why you paid him. That's why you don't draft another quarterback in the first round, but that's why you paid Kirk Cousins for those moments. Boom, 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 touchdown. Like, we need it. We have to have it. You know, we're on the road. You know, they've been slowing us down all night. Our defense has played great. We feel like we can win this game. Good weather. You know, road win kind of situation, and he comes through. And so, Captain Kirk with another Kirko Chains with a game-winning drive. Kudos to him. Kudos to that Falcons organization for pulling the trigger on Kirk. Great job. He looks like he looked on that drive like vintage Kirk Cousins. So good for him. But I promised it. We're going to get to the negative of week two before we move to week three. What's going on in Baltimore? Like, we have fans calling for Harbaugh's job, which feels a bit extreme. If John Harbaugh gets fired, he's hired within the next 30. I mean, there's a lot of teams that would fire their coach just to hire John Harbaugh. Like, a lot of them would fire their coach today. To hire John Harbaugh. Like, if John Harbaugh came as available, New York would fire Dable. Cleveland may not fire Stefanski, but New York would fire Dable. New York would fire Robert Saleh. Indy would get rid of their guys. I think it's Steichen's up there. Like, I won't go through all the names because that's how you end up getting in spots. But there's a lot of coaches that would get real, real nervous whose agents would start making calls if John Harbaugh became available. So I don't go into this stuff about Harbaugh's job security. However, something's wrong. Losing to the Chiefs on the road Thursday night opener 27-20, it's not a bad loss. It's not. Losing to the Raiders and a come from behind victory and a come from behind loss at home as what 9-point favorite did. So that's the only thing I took in Jack's pack that lost. Spoiler on that. With 10 days to prepare, you're at home, you got a bad taste in your mouth from the Chiefs game, and you lose to the Raiders 26-23, and they come back. They came back on you and beat you in your building. Justin Tucker can't make kick over 50. This year, there's only been two missed 50-yard attempts this season. Both have been from Tucker. Like, he's won for like his last like nine. So Justin Tucker can't shoot anymore. Can't kick anymore. I'm sorry. Lamar, the Ravens offense looks the same. Even with the addition of Derrick Henry. I told people this. I said it's going to be one of the more pointless, big name, one of the more pointless big name acquisitions in a long time. The Ravens, before they acquired Derrick Henry, had the best rush attack in the league. Offensive lineup is going to be inexperienced. A passing game you can't trust in big moments. After signing Derrick Henry, they had the best rushing attack in the league, an offensive line you can't trust, and an offense that can't pass in big moments. It did nothing. It accomplished nothing. And I really wish they had done something, because even if Henry makes the rushing game better, you're not going to improve enough to where it makes up the gap for other stuff. And so that's the issue with what the Baltimore Ravens did. But they've got some problems. I don't know if it's systemic. I do think it's roster based, but I don't think it's systemic. But they do have to figure out something in Baltimore where they get another receiver in there, fix that online, do something, merge the system. Derrick used to run an outside zone. They're trying to run out of inside zone and dive. So maybe merge some of the mesh points in the system to kind of make it work. But they have got to figure out something in Baltimore. All right, we're going to take a quick little break. We're going to transition into week 3, right after this quick break. Welcome back into the show. Kind of a long-winded week 2 there, so we took a little break there. We're going to get right into week 3. Remember, we started off Thursday Night Football last night with the Patriots on the road at the Jets. If you guys watched the video show, which again, I will link into this episode description. You guys know I picked the Pats +6. In order, and I said the Pats might win it outright, but definitely hit the +6, and they didn't do any of that. I would have needed +21 to hit, because the Jets dominate the Pats 24-3. It was Aaron Rodgers' first real home game. He had his debut game when he got hurt with the Jets. It was on 9/11. They brought the flag out. It was a whole big moment. 3 plays into the career, Jets career, he blows his Achilles. And so took the win out of the sails. Zach Wilson comes in, and we know how the rest of the season goes, right? But in his first real Jets home game, he beats the Patriots 24-3. Rodgers goes 27-35 for 281, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, including one of the tightest window touchdowns you'll ever see. Christian Gonzalez was all over Gary Wilson, and it was, 2 inches down. Christian Gonzalez probably picked 6s it. And it said it's perfectly to Garrett Wilson. And it was actually Rodgers' first passing touchdown to a first-round receiver in his career. So that was an insane stat. He thrown 580-some-odd touchdowns, and Garrett Wilson got his first touchdown. And Garrett Wilson became the first first-rounder to catch a touchdown pass from Aaron. So that was pretty impressive. And then the Patriots... Look, they're my squad, man. Our offensive line was bad, real bad. And they were good against the Bengals. They were solid enough against the Seahawks. The Jets wrecked it. Jacoby Brissett was on, felt like he was on ICU watch. Jacoby Brissett felt like he was on ICU watch. Drake May came in. He got body slammed. Like, it was just... That O-line, man, was torturously bad. And if the Pats are going to go anywhere, if we're going to go anywhere, we have got to fix that offensive line. I don't know. Separation-wise, the weapons are getting open, but they can't get the ball because their quarterback's on their back. So I said that's something that we're going to have to fix exponentially and expeditiously if the Patriots hope to go anywhere, even in the regular season. If they hope to get more than 4 or 5 wins, then they're going to have to fix that O-line, whether it's technique, whether it's personnel, something. They're going to have to figure something out with an offensive line, because that simply cannot happen. All right, and so now we're going to look at the rookies in Week 3. We're not going to go into specific games in Week 3 because, of course, we'll have these games in Jack's pack. So we're not going to deep dive into all the games in Week 3, but we're going to look at some rookies and, you know, will these rookies throw a touchdown pass? You have Caleb Williams versus the Indianapolis Colts. I think Caleb gets his first one this week. Get a chance against a not-so-great Colts defense, especially in that back end. And so I think Caleb gets his chance. He dances around, flings one, and he gets his opportunity at his first career touchdown against the Indianapolis Colts. Bo Nix versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I also believe he gets on the board with his first career touchdown against Tampa Bay. Now, it may come late. It may come in garbage time, but he'll get it. Denver's a bad offense right now. Many people are wondering if it's time to have the Sean Payton conversation as far as, you know, just how good is he or was Drew Brees really this amazing? Because he is not – he told us it was Russell Wilson. And so then he gets his guy in. That all the reports were saying they were locked in Bo Nix from the jump. And he and Bo Nix, albeit the same age, just seem to not be clicking so far. It's just something's off with them. They are not playing well in the slightest. And so that is something that I would definitely monitor if I am a Denver Broncos supporter, a Denver Broncos management team, whatever. I would try to figure out some way, some feasible way to get Bo Nix to be average. I'm not asking him to be spectacular. I'm asking him to be average. For instance, you lose to the Seahawks 26-20 on the road. Again, not a bad loss. But you lose at home to the Steelers to score 13 points. Like, you're supposed to win that game. You gave up 13 points, you're supposed to win that game comfortably. Even in the NFL. And they were unable to do that. So they're going to need someone to step up for the Broncos and get a victory this weekend in Tampa. And then lastly, but certainly not least, Jaden Daniels of the Washington Commanders. He battles Joe Burrow of the Cincinnati Bengals. It will be all LSU QB Monday Night Football game. There's two Monday Night games this week, but this one features all LSU quarterbacks. Actually, the ones right back to each other, the two LSU Heisman winners. It tells you all, it gives you all LSU all the time in this game. And so I think Daniels wants to show out in this game. I think he does. I think he gets a couple of touchdowns here. And I think he makes his game close, especially coming after a game where he did not, the team did not score a touchdown. The other team made all field goals. The other team scored three touchdowns. Jaden Daniels' team did not score a singular touchdown. And Jaden Daniels' team ultimately wins. It's insane. But it got done because they recently signed kicker, nails 7 out of 7 field goals, and the Washington Commanders get the dub in that game. And so, you know, Cincinnati's going to have to deal with Jaden Daniels' feet. I think that's what he's going to really put the pressure on Cincy and then hit him up from the pocket. All right, so let's just transition a little bit. The Miami Dolphins begin life after Tua versus the Seattle Seahawks. Now, Tua, again, has gone on injury reserve for concussions. Ultimately, this is, I think it's Tua's fourth concussion because I'm 99% sure he was concussed in the game before the infamous game where he fingers locked up the first time and people were really scared for his life. Like, I believe he was concussed before that, but obviously he passed concussion protocol and was able to get back on the field the next week. Again, I don't think that's correct because how he played before the hit that I believe gave him concussion after he played was night and day. And so I'm going to say there's no way he wasn't concussed whenever he played that next game that led to the really, really bad one the following game. However, the Dolphins did place him on injury reserve, and now they begin life without him. for at least four games. Skylar Thompson is expected to get the start. However, the team did sign former Pro Bowl quarterback Tyler Snoop Huntley from the Baltimore Ravens practice squad. And so that is someone that I think could push Skylar Thompson. If Skylar comes out and has a rough game, I think it would be interesting to see if Snoop Huntley can get them some excitement, especially using his legs in the run game. And then the Carolina Panthers began life after Bryce Young, who was benched, the number one overall pick just last season, 2023, number one overall pick specifically, was benched in favor of Andy Dalton due to poor performance. Many people around the league, people I talked to, discussed how it was unfair, how they didn't like how it was done, how the team is pretty bad, so you can't blame just Bryce Young, but also this GM and this head coach has no loyalty to Bryce Young. Neither were they when he was drafted. Frank Reich was the head coach when Bryce Young was drafted. And I can't think of the GM's name, but neither coach nor GM was there when Bryce Young was drafted. You're in a draft where Quinn Ewers is coming out, Shedeur Sanders is coming out, where you could sit in the draft and get your franchise quarterback who's not 5'8" and marginally athletic and doesn't have a big arm. And best thing is being Drew Brees 2.0, and Drew Brees was a one of one. You know, like there's just so many advantages to getting your own guy if you are the GM and the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. There's so many advantages to getting your guy. And so they move on from Bryce Young, and they so they sit the 2023 number one overall pick. He becomes QB2, Andy Dalton becomes QB1. And so we'll see how the Panthers look behind Andy Dalton. But up next, we're going to transition to our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Welcome back into the show, and we're going to jump into our very successful NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Now, we spoke about last episode, we went 3-2. This week, we went 4-1, and we talked about how in order to be a professional gambler and to make money off this and really, like, basically live being a gambler, you got to hit 57% of your bets. That's like the rule of thumb to avoid juicing, to avoid the juice and all that stuff. You got to hit 57%. Right now, we're on pace for 70%. We've done 10 games. We've hit three. We've hit seven, sorry. So right now, we're on pace for 70%. And so we've done great. Now, I spoke about last episode, when those early lines come out, Vegas is kind of all over the place. And so you got to take advantage of those first couple of weeks in order to, when Vegas starts nailing lines, you're kind of looking to, trying to avoid lines. But there's been some absolute soft balls thrown out over these past a couple of weeks. This week, however, the lines tightened down. I didn't like very many of them, but I got a 5-pack ready to go. Our first number, which is our favorite number, it's Green Bay Packers +3 at Tennessee. I don't know what quarterbacks the Tennessee Titans have been playing, or maybe the media's been watching, but Jordan Love and Malik Willis are significantly better than Will Levis. Will Levis has memed a turnover, has memed a fumble. It's memed an interception, rather, in two consecutive games. Against the Bears, he falls to his knees, and then last week he does like a pirouette fall down throw. And so I just don't see the Packers losing this game. I don't care that it's in Tennessee. Malik Willis knows the stadium well. This is his chance to get revenge. I think LaFleur is aware of that. And so he will take his opportunities anywhere he can in order to give Malik Willis an opportunity to shine in the place that traded him for saying that he wasn't going to develop. So, you know, that's going to be a very interesting ball game. But again, Green Bay +3 over Tennessee. Philadelphia at the Saints. Saints -2.5. Hammer the Saints. Look, the Eagles defense is going to be solid. We know that. We know they can play defensively. But then the New Orleans offense is going to come at you directly. It can get smash mouth. It can get spread. It can get direct snap. It can get motion, like bubbles, whatever you want to do. The New Orleans Saints offense is down to do it with you. And so I just think Philadelphia doesn't have enough defensive talent to make the difference against New Orleans. So New Orleans plus 2.5, minus 2.5 rather, Hammer New Orleans. Detroit at Arizona, Arizona plus 3. Take Arizona. This is a double because this is a pick where if I didn't really have any real reason behind it, I would just say, oh, well, you know, I say Arizona's really good. Well, they've got to start beating some good teams. But my logic behind it is I think Arizona win this game straight up, especially if it's in Arizona. And the reason why I say that is I truly believe in the Detroit Lions. I like the Detroit Lions. But they're starting to get beat up, and they're starting to get a ref hosed. And they're going to get ref hosed by multiple officials. So that being said, Arizona gets the win to me, all right, but they definitely cover the plus 3. Jacksonville at Buffalo. Buffalo minus 5.5. Take Buffalo. I think this is a 10 or 12 point game. I think Buffalo hammers Dalvin Cook's brother, James Cook, away. He just keeps going. Then Josh Allen gets him one, and they're just going to make Jacksonville play in a phone booth. We know you invested in corners over there. We know you got a good free safety. You ain't fix this. So it's going to be a lot of whole lot of inside zone stuff from Buffalo. They're going to run Josh Allen a lot. They're going to run some power, some counter. And then the prince I was promised, Trevor Lawrence has to then continue to be as dominant as they can be. So it's gonna be a very interesting game. But again, take Buffalo minus 5. And our last game, New York at Cleveland. Cleveland minus 6.5. New York being the Giants. Take Cleveland here. It's the Giants. The Giants won't score more than 14. So you're telling me that Cleveland can't get to 21? That's highly unlikely. So I've got the Cleveland Browns covering 9.5, even with all the Deshaun Watson stuff, even with the lack of Nick Chubb. I think their defense is too good to allow more than 14 points against the Giants. And I'm confident any NFL offense get 21. So I am picking Cleveland here, minus 6.5. So again, let's run back through the bets. Green Bay plus 3, Saints minus 2.5, Arizona plus 3, Buffalo minus 5, and Cleveland minus 6.5. But up next, let's transition to the WNBA, talk about what's going down there. Welcome back into the show. And now we are done to talk about the WNBA. They have officially reached the playoffs. It's been a great season, an amazing regular season. Not without its controversy, not without its issues. And a lot of the WNBA's problems that I've been highlighting over the past few years were brought to the forefront of a lot of new fans' mind who are used to dealing with the NBA or the NFL, whatever their main sport is. It was brought to, or even not the main sport, they're the first time in the sport. A lot of people in the WNBA that came in to watch, well, this is their first time in a major sport at all. So there was just a whole bunch of issues. They were just naturally like, oh, I can watch every game. Oh, no, you can't. I can buy League Pass and watch every game. No, you can't. Oh, there's this scheduling stuff. No, you can't. Like I said, it was so much stuff that was that was an issue with the W this year that, you know, I think that Kathy Engelbert is going to be fixing over the next, you know, next year. Definitely going to highlight that change for her. And I hope she holds this stuff being talked about inside the league office. But let's talk about it. So the WNBA is in the playoffs. First round is best of three. The second round And the WNBA finals are rounds of five. So, the number one seed, Liberty, get the Atlanta Dream. That's going to be a quick 2-0 series. Liberty, to me, are head and shoulders. You know, it's a big three and it's a big four. And there's a gap. Like, there's a top four and then there's a gap. And really it's top three, but I have to give the Aces, a two-time defending champion, benefits of the doubt. And so, like I said, there's a gap between the four and five in terms of, you know, championship potential. But record-wise, top three, Liberty's number one seed. They only lost one game they probably really wanted to win, and that was the Commissioner's Cup to the Minnesota Lynx in a game that was moved into Brooklyn, and they weren't their usual – not Brooklyn. A game that was moved into, I think, Staten Island. And it was weird for the Liberty. It felt like a road game, even if it was a home game. Until the Lynx got them there. But I think they take care of the Dream quickly, 2-0, to go on to the second round. The Minnesota Lynx, to me, defeat the Mercury in three games. And that's respect for Diana Taurasi. That's respect for Brittany Griner. That's respect for Sophie Cunningham and Kalia Copper. And I just named three of them were Olympians. So that's out of respect to them. I think that they get a game. I don't think Diana wants to go out on her own floor. I think this is her last run, but I don't think she wants to go out on her own floor. And so she, has a vintage DT game. She gets, 27, 30 points and staves off the Lynx, and then they take him out in game three. The Connecticut Sun defeat the Fever in three games. Again, this is out of respect for Caitlin Clark, Aaliyah Boston, Kelsey Mitchell, and the Indiana home crowd. Connecticut's going to be packed because of not only Caitlin Clark fans, but because of the playoffs. Like, Connecticut's going to be packed. They have a great basketball culture in the state of Connecticut, thanks to UConn. And so I think they're going to be ravenous and going insane for this game. However, I just think that, Indiana's going to get that same major boost at home, and they're going to stave off elimination. But ultimately, the Connecticut gets it in three. And the Aces, to me, sweep the storm. I think this is what the Aces waiting on all season. I think you kind of see it over the past few games, they've started to ramp it up. They've started getting to a point where it's like, okay, playoffs around the corner, let's do this. And so I think that they are going to be dominant. I think they're going to be historic. I think they're going to run over the Seattle Storm. It's no disrespect to the Storm. It's just you have such a great team effectively waiting on the playoffs. And so that is what they're going to do. I think the Aces are going to win in four. A two. And they're going to be led by the WNBA, should be unanimous MVP, Asia Wilson. And I'm going to rattle off her season. Okay? It's what she did this year. First in points per game. First in blocks per game. First total rebound. First in stocks, which is steals plus blocks. First in PER. First in win shares. First in offensive rating. Second in defensive rebounds per game. Second in double-doubles. Second in 30-point performances. Fourth in steals. 15 consecutive 20-point performances, WNBA record. 8 30-point 10-rebound games, WNBA record. 8 consecutive 20-10 games, WNBA record. Became the first player to score 1,000 points in the season. Highest point per game average in a WNBA season. Only WNBA player to average 20 points while shooting 50% or better. Only WNBA player averaging 25+. Only WNBA player with multiple 40-point performances. Only WNBA player ranking first in multiple main statistical categories. Only WNBA player ranking top 5 in 4 major statistical categories. Only WNBA player ranking top 5 in both steals and blocks. One of 2 players averaging 10+ rebounds with Angel Reese. One of 2 players averaging ranking top 10 in points and field goal percentage. She has a 4.1 point increase from last season, which is the highest increase by a WNBA player averaging 20+ points in their last season. She also picked up an Olympic gold medal and was the tournament MVP for the Olympics. What a season. She should be the runaway MVP. There shouldn't even be a question. If anybody gets a vote, I'm screaming. I don't know what I'm going to scream because I don't know who the vote's going to get, no one else should get a vote. This was a mission all year because in her mind, and many others, she should have won MVP last season. Ended up being Breonna Stewart, but in her mind and many others, she ends up winning MVP last. She does not win MVP, and then she was on a rampage to prove she should have won it this season. And are you going to argue with the fact you should have won it at this point? She had a hell of a year. Congratulations to her and her team. I say I'm waiting on her unanimous MVP announcement. Can't wait for that to come out. And expansion is got to be the WNBA's favorite word. As they expand again, they're going to go to Portland in 2026. So it's going to be Golden State next year. The Golden State Valkyrie next year. Toronto and Portland are going to be in 2026 together. And then Kathy Engelbert is looking to add a 16th franchise no later than 2028. And then they'll reevaluate after that once they get to 16. So kudos to the WNBA. This is very building and they will come. You've got charter flights, you've got attendance, you've got money, you've got NIL, you've got all this NIL endorsements, you've got a TV ratings, big TV ratings contract they're gonna get more money from. So kudos to the W for taking the time and putting the effort into producing a great product. But up next, we're going to jump into Jack's Hot Take, which is going to talk about Shohei Ohtani. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to talk about, in my opinion, the greatest batting season in the history of baseball. Yes, Shohei Ohtani did not hit 73 home runs in a season. He didn't. But what he did do is that he's the first player in history to ever have 50 home runs and 51 RBIs, or 50 home runs and 50 RBIs, and at this point he has 50 and 50. Since RBI became an official stat in 1920, only one player has, over the course of their entire career, had a game with 10 RBIs, a game with 6 hits, a game with 5 extra base hits, a game with 3-plus homers, and a game with stolen bases. Again, this is over their career. Like, same game or not, just have these games on their stat line since 1920. Shohei Ohtani did it yesterday. So in the game he gets the 50-50 or the 51-51, he also does all the stuff I just mentioned. So what no one has done in a career, he did it in one night. Shohei Ohtani is ridiculous. He got told he couldn't pitch this year because of injury and just decided to do the greatest side quest in the history of Major League Baseball. That is a level of athletic dominance that shouldn't be possible. It would be like if you're in football and they told LeBron you can't dunk for some reason, and he breaks the 3-point records, and you're like, what? Or Tom Brady, it's like elbow doesn't work right or shoulder doesn't work right, and so he goes and plays safety and he's at the best safety in the league. You're like, huh? Like, that shouldn't be what am I witnessing? What am I looking at? What is happening? And that's pretty much the mood for Shohei Ohtani. It's, what are we looking at? What is happening? Why? How is it happening? And they asked the manager of the team he played last night, I can't remember who it is right now, would he consider walking him? Because he was getting close to the records, but he was having one of those nights. And the manager said, no, I got too much respect for the guy. And I'll clean his language up a little bit. But I've got too much respect for him. I'm not going to walk him. And I commend him for saying it, because any competitor would say similar. But I would have considered it. I'm sure he thought about it. But what Shohei Ohtani was doing was so historic. I think even he kind of wanted to see it a little bit. And plus, his team was down a lot. It wasn't a competitive game. And it's like, okay, if I can skip around this guy, maybe I can get somebody else. They were down a lot. So, kudos Shohei Ohtani, man. Absolutely ridiculous. He should be the runaway MVP for the NL. It shouldn't even be close. Congratulations to him. To have him and Paul Skeens with their historic season, both in baseball at the same time, we're in a golden era right now of athletics and baseball. And with Shohei Ohtani leading the way. And now there's a whole generation of Japanese players who gets to see Shohei Ohtani. It's not just Ichiro. It's not just Yu Darvish. It's Shohei Ohtani can be the lightning rod for Japanese players to come over to America and what they can do and be. But that is all I have for you guys today. I hope you have a great rest of your day. As always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow and turn on your post notifications for Just In Time Sports social media on all your favorite social medias. But this is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.